Good evening. You're listening to KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio out of Round Mountain in Bella Vista. And this is Jim Dowling, host of Write Stuff. And Write Stuff is a show where I bring in a writer from the local community. All kinds of writers I've had, and poets and songwriters and novelists. So you never know what you're going to hear on Write Stuff. Tonight I have a very special guest, the Reverend Mary Mitchell. And she is, well, she's collaborated on a book, My Search for Ancient Wisdom, with an African-American prisoner who has had a life sentence. And they have exchanged letters over the years, and it's a fascinating read. It's full of thought-provoking ideas. And so thank you for coming in, Mary. And could you tell us how this correspondence came about? And also tell us a little bit about yourself so the listener understands the real nature of this correspondence.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate that. Years ago, I was writing an article for a magazine, and I wrote these articles for 7 years, and it was on the power of our mind, the power of positive thinking. And this prisoner, Michael Nichols, in for life since he was 19 years old. Yeah. He was 31 at the time. And he read these articles and he thought, maybe she has something I can learn about to help me. So he wrote me a letter and said, would you correspond with me and help me learn this philosophy so I can adjust to life without parole? And he just turned 50 this year. Yeah. And we've been corresponding since then. So we've got 13, 14 years of letters between us. Wow. And he's a prolific writer. The fascinating thing about him is when he was growing up, his mother had to work. And all summer long, every morning she would drop him off at the local library and pick him up on the way home. They had a children's area that to him, he had the world at his fingertips. He loved it. He read everything he could read. So he's quite well read. He's read all the religious books, all the texts. He's read history. And when he finally started reading his African American history, he finally started to learn who he was.
Yeah, great story.
Yeah, and so as a teenager, when his two uncles came back from Vietnam, one got married and raised children, and the other became a gangster. And he thought that was a lot more fun. So he joined in that activity, and very soon he committed murder when he was 19 and sentenced to life without parole. Now, since then, I know that putting teenagers in prison for life is very traumatic. Their brains are still forming. And so he went into prison ready to be the deadly gangster because sure. He was afraid of being hurt. That was his big fear.
Security.
Yeah. And so when he started writing me letters, it was all about how awful it was. Right. Horrible stuff. Horrible, horrible, horrible. And I said, if we're going to write, you're going to have to listen to me. And I have been teaching the power of the mind, power of positive thinking, for now for 30 years. Yeah. And when I started telling him about this, it shocked him. Wait a minute. And I think the most important thing I told him initially is that everybody is doing the best they can in every moment. Everybody. Whether they're the drunk on the street, a drug addict, a criminal, everybody's doing what they think is right for them in every moment. Mm-hmm. The guards are doing what's right. The prisoners are doing what they think is right. Now that they're at odds with each other is not a surprise. But when he started seeing that the guards were doing what they thought was in their best interest, he saw them in a whole new light.
Sure.
And he started teaching other prisoners about this philosophy. Right now, his motto is, each one, teach one. He's gone from being a deadly gangster to like a Buddha, a prison Buddha. Yeah. And he teaches all the new guys that come in how to adjust.
Sure.
And he's got more friends than you could imagine.
Well, tell us a little bit about that transformation, because, you know, I've read most of the book, and there is a tone at the beginning that really isn't there at the end.
Right. It's gone. Yeah. When he started.
And how long ago was this kicked off?
It was 2000.
Over 10 years ago.
Right? 13 years ago.
13 years ago.
Yeah. So. And the book is all of our letters, all of them.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah. So when he started seeing people differently, he became different. And he's been taking a lot of classes in prison, and one of them is the criminal mind. And through that, he realized all these years in the lunchroom, when you go to eat, he would sit at a table in a corner with a wall on one side, a wall on the other, and his back to the wall to protect himself because he was afraid someone would come up and try and hurt him. People were scared to death of him, this guy in a corner. No one would go close to him. When he realized that that is criminal thinking, he thought, oh my God, look what I've done to myself. I've isolated myself. So he started going over to other tables and joining other people, which scared the heck out of them.
Yeah.
But he started making more friends that way. People started being less afraid of him. And, you know, you mentioned the story of the shoelaces, and that is a really good example. For many years, if a guard would approach him and demand something of him, he would break the guard's arm or leg or get into a brawl with him.
Sure.
So one day, coming out of the cafeteria, a guard said, Nichols, you got blue shoelaces on. You're not allowed to have blue shoelaces. Give me those shoelaces.
Yeah.
And everybody in the cafeteria was watching. They knew there was going to be a brawl.
Yeah.
He took a deep breath, took off his shoelaces, and handed them to the very surprised guard.
Sure. He broke the cultural norm.
Broke the mold, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And he continues to do that.
Yeah, he's an amazing guy.
He is.
A very articulate, sometimes really poetic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I've taken some of his sayings, many of them, and I put them in a framework to show beginning, middle, end, how he evolved. And it's quite fascinating. I think I might make a booklet out of that.
Oh, yeah. It's a great idea. So I'm wondering about his prospects. Toward the end of the book, there was a bill that was going to be passed. Did that ever pass? It was something that would allow a lifer to be considered up for parole after 25 years in prison.
Right. There are a lot of advocacy groups in the country that are saying teenagers that are sentenced to life without parole should be given a review after 25 years. That's a long time, you know. And so he's been in over that. So I have written to the governor of the state and said if that law is passed, and I will send you a book and you can read how this person would be a great role model for letting someone out of prison who's got life without parole. So I've sent them letters. It keeps coming up in the legislature. It's not there yet, but at least it's getting close. They're talking about it and getting more support for it.
Good, good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's hard to, what is the role of prisons? Is it to simply punish? Is it to possibly change people for the better?
You know,
is it to get people off the street? You know, you got to have hope behind those walls.
You know, it's all of the above.
Yeah.
But one of the fascinating things I think about, because he was in the hole for over a year this past year, they started putting people in solitary in like 1872, and it was in a penitentiary in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, somewhere. And they thought some people are just hard to control, and they thought it would make them feel repentant, and that they'd see they were bad boys.
Yeah. Innocence.
But what happened was they did this initial test. Most of the people committed suicide.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah. But nobody changed their attitude. They said, no, if we maybe put them in longer or something. It kept evolving. And now over 5,000 people today are in solitary across this country.
5,000.
Now, there was a riot at his prison last January 2021. I don't know about it. I read it in the paper. I didn't ask about it because I didn't want to know. And after the riot, his arm was broken and right arm was broken and his right wrist was crushed. So they gave him Tylenol and said, drink lots of water. So he used his socks to pull over his arm to keep it steady. And when he started getting stronger, he started doing push-ups, sit-ups, all these things. And now he says he's got the best six-pack any teenager would love to have.
Yeah. And he ended up writing an article about how to survive the hole.
Yeah, after he was sentenced in for 9 months, and then they met with him, whoever the people are, and they said, let's make it a year. Yeah. So he was in a year, January to January. And then they transferred him to another prison where they didn't know him, so they put him in the hole for 30 days to observe him.
Yeah.
So it was 13 months.
Jeez.
I said, Michael, how did you survive? So he wrote me the top 10 tips for surviving the hole for a year without going crazy. And it's just fabulous. There's this group called the Marshall Project. They're an advocacy group. They have a newsletter that once a week they take an essay from a prisoner and put it in their newsletter. So I sent his top 10 tips to them, and they printed it last week. So there are over 10,000 people reading that.
Wow.
Around the country. So everybody's going to know how to survive the hole.
Yeah, it's pretty good. If we have a little bit of time, maybe we could take a closer look at that. Yeah, and you, Reverend Mary Mitchell, I didn't stick that in the introduction, I don't think, but tell us a little bit about what you do.
If I can give just a short backstory. When I was 10, my father died.
Mm-hmm.
My mother had to go to work to raise my brother and I in the 50s and keep our home. She was so positive. I mean, you couldn't shake her. She was so positive. And when I was 16, I read the book, The Power of Positive Thinking, Norman Vincent Peale, and I went, that's my mother.
Really? Yeah.
And so I inhaled that book several times. I mean, it was just, I could not read that enough. And it affected my whole life. And I've always put that first in everything I've done. Well, when I got a divorce and moved to Reading for a job, I worked 7 days a week for a year, and then I finally thought I needed to get out and meet people. And so I went to the Women's Refuge Crab Feed. That was my
good
big
start.
Outing.
Yeah.
Yeah, big collar, long sleeve shirt. And the gal who was the bartender there said, is this your first time out? And I said,
really?
Yes. She said, let me introduce you to some of my friends.
Hmm.
And nice group of people. And I said, how long have you been divorced? This one guy said, 8 years. And I went, oh my God, I can't imagine that. I said, why? And he said, well, when I tell women what church I go to, I never see them again. Oh, what church is that? Church of Religious Science. What do they teach? The power of the mind, the power of positive thinking.
Oh, wow.
How you can change your life.
Sure.
Change your thinking, change your life. So I went the next morning and cried during the whole service.
Oh, my gosh.
I cried the whole time. I was hooked. And that's what it's all about. It's the science of our mind. That's what it's called. It's religious science. It's beautiful.
Hey, if you're just tuning in, this is Jim Dowling, host of Right Stuff, and you are listening to my interview with the Reverend Mary Mitchell about her book, My Search for Ancient Wisdom. It's a compilation of letters over 13 years with a man, Michael J. Nichols, in prison for life in the state of Missouri. So I hope you enjoy.
And so that was in 1990. So I've taught over 100 classes on this myself at the Center for Spiritual Living. That used to
and
be
written
church.
Quite a few articles, haven't you?
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah. I, for 7 years, wrote a monthly magazine article about it.
Yeah.
And other articles for periodicals. And it's just law. I mean, it's how the creative process works. And if you've been around negative people very long, you know that's kind of catching. It can be addictive to be negative. But it also can be beneficial in so many ways to be positive, to see the good somewhere.
Sure.
Somewhere.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I do a lot of work with people who have problems. We call it, it'd be like a counseling session, except we teach the process of creative thinking to shift their life around.
Now, is this the same as the Center for Spiritual Living?
Yes, they changed their name.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Religious science just it just doesn't make you feel real warm and fuzzy.
I like the change.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a neat place. They do some really neat community things down there. I do drum circles down there.
Oh, you do? Yeah. Oh, great. I've heard they're fabulous.
Oh, they are. They're.
Can't go out at night. But
it's tough for me too, but I'll go out for my drum circle. So this all ties into your connection with Michael, you know?
It does. And he found me, and I've not gone out and searched for people, but I was a co-senior minister at the center for a few years. And while I was there, I put an ad in the Record Searchlight. You know, here's what we do. Come and visit the center, et cetera. Well, a prisoner who interestingly gets the Reading newspaper every day because he's a friend of Silas Lyons, and his name is Charles Patrick Smith. And he was homeless here in the Reading area for 15 years and then got into trouble and ended up in jail. But he's an amazing writer. And he wrote a rebuttal article to one of the board of supervisors who said something critical about the homeless, and he was homeless, and he wrote this beautiful article.
Oh, wow.
Silas Lyons brought him in and said, I'd like to submit this to our parent company. And he won the Golden Pen Award.
Oh, boy.
And so Silas said, if you write me 800 words a week, I will make sure you get the Record Searchlight every day. So that's how he saw my ad.
Okay.
So he wrote to the church and he said, would someone there correspond with me, because I have no family and no friends. Of course I'm going to do that. He thought he was brain damaged. Very interesting person, because his father was a Hell's Angel and his mother was Native American, and his father was very violent, and he was raised in these meth houses in Southern California.
Wow.
Horrible, horrible environments. He was afraid to be touched and wouldn't look other people in the eye. So his father kept calling him a queer, and he would beat him up, try to beat him out of it. So he had horrible scars on him. So in his letter, he says, I'm brain damaged. But during my time when I was homeless, I lived by the river under the Cypress Street Bridge and traveled all over the Northern California forests. And he realized he didn't know anything. He didn't have an education. So he started getting books out of the library. He read hundreds of books under the bridge. And he also learned art. He became quite an artist. So when he started sending me art, he has a photographic memory of birds, animals. He draws the most amazing things. And I said, Charles, you're not brain dead. You have a special gift of seeing the energy in everything.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Changed his whole life.
Well, you need to get started on another book.
I told him, because he's written me so much about his life. It's like the biggest drama movie you'd ever want to make. And so I asked him to start writing everything he can. Now, he was already writing me 20 pages a week.
Wow.
Before I asked him to do this, I just received an envelope with 85 pages in it. He has a lot of time on his hands. And it's
so he's incarcerated right now.
He's in California. Yeah.
Does he have any prospect for getting out?
He does. His parole date is next March. And I have met his best friend, who is also in prison with him. And so we keep talking about, what does he need today? He'll send him some money, and then the next month maybe I will. And so we're giving him support as he goes through these last few months. And when he gets out, he'll come back to Reading.
Great.
But while he was learning art and being homeless, his focus was on graffiti, painting over graffiti.
Oh, really?
With butterflies. Bumblebees, anything. And in the paper, he would see somebody that died in a crash, and he would go to their crash site, and he would paint something for them on a telephone
pole.
That's
amazing.
I know. He's a really sweet guy.
Yeah.
And then he would make drawings and leave them under the windshield wipers of police cars. And so he's just a really, really sweet person.
Really?
He's 46 right now.
Pretty rare.
Very rare.
Yeah.
And all his art pieces, when I get them, I number them, I scan them, and then I put them in a chronology, in a file. I've got 264 pieces of his art. And when he gets out, I'll be presenting them to him so that he can start with his own portfolio.
Great.
And move forward.
Yeah. Have you thought about some kind of a book?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think it would make a terrific movie.
It's very heartwarming, the story so far.
Yeah, it's very sweet. I have another prisoner that I met his mother at the crisis center when I was doing chaplain work there. And he's here in California. And we've been corresponding, and he keeps writing his mother, "Mary's saving my life. If I didn't hear all the good things from her, I don't know what I'd do." So I think I found my niche.
Yeah. It's a rich area, and you just don't hear much about prisoners. We tend to stereotype those people behind bars. I was part of a WASC group that went up to Pelican Bay years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and we were supposed to look at their education program and assess it. And, it was a scary experience. The whole up there, everybody up there was in some kind of isolation.
Right.
And just hungering for contact. And spending their time poring over law books in case they got one more shot at the court. And it's a different culture, you know. And back to Michael, it seems like he's a real survivor. You know, he went through that whole thing of being bitter. And today he's hoping for a shot at freedom. And he's aware that he's naive, that he has a lot of things to learn if he's going to succeed outside the bars. I really wish him the best of luck.
Yeah, I do too. Who knows? But, in some of the last letters I received, he eloquently says something like, "I've accepted that this is where I'm meant to be, and I'm making the most of it that I can, because now I can help others in ways he couldn't if he was out." So he's accepted his lot in life. Not that he doesn't want parole, but he's accepted it. If that's where he has to be, so be it.
Right. So, Mary, why don't we go back to his 10 tips for surviving solitary confinement?
That's a great idea. I think he's very wise here. And just to remind people who are listening, The hole is actually a 7 by 9 foot cement room with a steel door and a slot in the door that they put their meals through and a small window to see outside. And the only thing in it is a cot, a thin mattress, a toilet, and a sink. They have to shackle him to take him to the shower once a week. And once a day, they shackle him and they take him outside so he can be outside for 1 hour a day. One of the first things that when I read these top 10 tips, I thought about COVID and how we have all been isolated, not just for 1 year, but for over 2 years.
Yeah.
So I hope these tips kind of make you realize how you did survive it or what you could do if it comes around again.
Sure.
And his first tip is, don't let the time do you. Make every day productive. Don't sleep away. Get up, stay up, and exercise. That's your most important thing. When he was in the hole, he started doing 500 sit-ups and leg lifts a day, and that increased to 3,000 a day, plus crunches. He said he has a six-pack that a 20-year-old would just love to have. He said, read, 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 anything you can read. He even read the dictionary to improve his vocabulary.
Wow.
Because it's a mind exercise. The guards there, he said, would rather see you driving yourself crazy than reading anything of literature. And study new things. And here's an interesting task. He started writing with not his dominant hand, with his other hand. Every day he would write a paragraph with his right hand and then write a paragraph with his left hand. And he said, after he started doing this for months, he realized it was a spiritual experience. He felt a vibration in his body that he had never felt before. Now, I thought that was fascinating.
That is, yeah.
And stay out of frivolous conversations with others because it only leads to arguments. And don't let, correctional officers draw you out, because they can give you an extra 30 days if you just say something to them that they don't like. And he says, leave the cell when the opportunity allows. I know when we first started going outside during COVID, it was scary. But he said, do it. Go to the shower. Leave the cell, because people in prison get cell anxiety, where they don't want to leave because they think the guards are going to come in and take something that they have, that they value. He said, when you're always leaving, they tend not to go to your cell because you don't look like you're full of anxiety. Write letters to everyone, loved ones. He's been writing letters to libraries to buy our book, and file grievances. In a prison, they don't like it when you file grievances.
Wow.
But what happens if you file a lot of grievances? They'll often transfer you to another prison. I got a kick out of that. He said they'd rather have people that have no complaints hanging around. Yeah. And the most important, he said, is exercise your faith daily, every day. Practice your spiritual discipline. It's gotten him through the worst time in the hole. And he says, prayer and all things that push me to improve in spiritual disciplines have been necessary for my survival. Very wise.
Yeah. And
very wise.
And where was that published?
Oh, in an advocacy group for prisoners. And they have newsletters that go out. And in the newsletter every week, they publish an essay from a prisoner.
Wow.
And so I sent that to him, and they contacted him, because all the prisoners in Missouri now have iPads, which is interesting, and got his permission to print it. And now over 10,000 people have read it.
So, Mary, with the time we have left, let's talk about what's happening right now with this book.
Well, I'm very excited because I have found a movie producer who is going to be reading it and giving me some feedback on whether it could be a good movie or a TV series, like Orange is the New Black, or Black is the New Orange, I forget that one, or a documentary, or just a one-shot Netflix program.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited about that.
My Search for Ancient Wisdom. Yeah.
Mary Mitchell and Michael Nichols.
Yeah.
And it's on Amazon.
Good. Well, let's hope it does well, and I'm sure it will. I mean, there's nothing like it.
It's very unique.
It's very unique. Well, thanks for coming in and sharing all of this with us. It's been a delightful interview.
It's gone very quick, hasn't it?
It has. It has. So, again, thanks for coming in, and you've been listening to KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio out of Round Mountain. And if you'd like to donate, go to our website, kkrn.org, and hit that donate button. Also, I'd like to remind our listeners that The Fall of the House of Usher is playing at the Riverfront Theater through November 5th. There are still tickets available. I've seen the show. It's very good. Thank you for listening, and have a nice evening.